A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Unprecedented, the new podcast hosted by me, journalist Angelica Malin. Unprecedented times call for unprecedented support. And through this twice weekly mini-series, I'll be chatting to the leading lights in a variety of fields about how not just to survive COVID-19, but thrive. Whether it's getting a grip on your anxiety, navigating a change in your work situation, or managing your money, this podcast will provide the insights and expertise needed to help you through these strange and challenging times. Kimberly Wilson is a chartered psychologist, author, and visiting lecturer working in private practice in central London. She's a governor of the Tavistock and Portman NHS Mental Health Trust and formerly led therapy service at Europe's largest women's prison. She's also the author of How to Build a Healthy Brain, which was published in March 2020 by Yellow Kite Books. Kimberly, thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
First off, how are you doing? How are you feeling?
I'm okay, actually. I've actually been really, really busy. So in a sense, that's been fine because it's kind of kept me focused on those sorts of things. And that I'll see how I feel when I'm a little bit less busy in a few weeks' time.
It's good. I think work is a good distraction. I know I keep seeing a lot of these memes going around being like, your worth is not measured in your productivity and stuff like that. And I do understand it. But for me, if I'm not productive, I'm in a worse place mental health wise. And I find work is a good coping mechanism just to have something to busy myself with, have some, I guess, a sense of purpose as well.
Yeah. And I think work helps us to organize our day. It kind of gives us a sense of structure and helps us to organize our thoughts and where we're supposed to be. So work, for a lot of people, can actually help them, you know, stay connected to a sense of normality. And that's important as well.
Yeah, absolutely. On days when I'm just, you know, in a duvet burrito watching Netflix all day long, I don't think I feel better for it as much as it feels good at the time. I always feel like it's a little bit dirty afterwards. And I'm like, oof, I don't know if that was actually serving me. So I'd like to start by asking about mental health and brain health. Obviously, you've written a book on brain health and you're an expert in it. What is the difference between our mental health and our brain health?
Of course, there's an overlap between the two. But I think traditionally we think about mental health and we think about it in the kind of abstract. We think about moods and thoughts, you know, whether those are negative thoughts or rumination or dark moods and depression and things like that. But we tend to think about them as independent of the organ that they actually arise from, which of course is the brain. And so essentially you couldn't think about, say, your cardiac risk factors without thinking about the health of your heart. So you can't really think about mental health without thinking about the health of your brain. And so that's thinking about the structure of the brain. So if moods and mental health are about the functions of the brain, then brain health is about the structure of it. What is the actual fabric and the working bits and pieces of the brain, and how do we help look after it so that your mood and mental health can be better and improved?
And how much control do we have over that structure and the health of our brains? Can we actually change our brain health?
We've actually got quite a lot of control over it. And this is kind of one of the things I really want people to understand, because unlike physical health, people tend to think that their mental health, their brain health, is completely out of their hands. You know, that it's, you know, just cross your fingers, hope for the best, you'll be all right. Or if you're not all right, there's nothing you can do about it. It was all kind of in the stars. And that's just simply not true. And even from the point of conception, you know, the reason, for example, that pregnant women are recommended folic acid is because it helps to lay down proper structure of the brain in the developing baby. And the same thing continues throughout your life. So in childhood, there's a huge demand for particular nutrients, especially essential fats. and that continues throughout life. And largely because the brain is what's considered what's called plastic, which is that it can remold and reshape throughout your entire life in response to the environment and your experiences and your nutrition.
And how much do we know about depression and anxiety and their relation to brain health? Are depression and anxiety conditions that we're born with, or is that something that develops in the course of our life, depending on, I suppose, how we treat our brain?
It's a combination. So with all mental health conditions, we think about a biopsychosocial model. So there's a biological aspect, there's a sociological or environmental aspect, and there's a psychological component, which is thinking about your early experiences, attitudes that you were exposed to, thinking styles that you were exposed to, the models that you saw before you in your family, in your parents, in your culture, in your environment, from your faith, for example, and all of those combine to give us a sense of our risk factors. So, you know, there is a thought to be at least a genetic component to things like depression, but your genes aren't the, you know, the full story. They're not the be all and end all, and that your risk actually depends on whether the environment triggers or kind of switches on your risk factors. So we know, for example, and we don't often have the opportunity to say this about interventions, but we know that exercise prevents depression. It can reduce your incident risk of depression, and just 60 minutes of movement per week can reduce depression incident by 17%. So that's quite a significant reduction when we think about kind of global prevalence of something like depression, which is now one of our leading causes of disability worldwide. So, you know, we have a tremendous amount of control, but because people aren't told that, we aren't really given that information about mental health being kind of amenable to change in the same way that we are physical health, people tend not to know that there are things that they can do. No, you know, exercise isn't going to, it's not the silver bullet, it's not magic that's going to take away all risk, but it probably can help. And the same with nutrition and sleep and other lifestyle factors.
Because I feel like the narrative around mental health and mental illness is not so much around preventative measures. From my experience, people only seem to talk about it in the context of, I feel depressed or I feel anxious, what can I do now? Mm. And less about, I suppose, staving off that happening and what can you do to stop that happening in the first place. I feel like I know so much about how to treat anxiety, but I didn't really know what to do before I felt anxious, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Then do you think that's the case?
I think that's absolutely the case, that we only in mental health do you wait until something goes wrong. You know, in every other aspect of health, you know, we think about, you know, teaching children to eat their greens because it's just going to be help prevent them, you know, having deficiencies. And we tell people to quit smoking because it will reduce their risk of lung cancer. But we don't tell people that there are things that they can do to reduce their risk of mental health concerns. And it makes me kind of angry, because mental health conditions are our leading causes of death and disability in the UK. Right? Dementia is the leading cause of death in the UK. Depression is one of the leading causes of disability around the world. Yet there isn't an organised health campaign around the brain to tell people, actually, here are the five or six things that you do have some control over in order to reduce your risk. And, you know, I want to be careful, because partly it's the stigma around mental health that prevents these messages from getting out, because people tend to think about mental health conditions as almost moral failings. You know, you haven't been strong enough, you haven't been able or capable enough. And that's not the case. That's not what we're saying. But what I'm saying is that we need to think about brain health in the same way that we think about other aspects of physical health. And there's absolutely no reason, no medical reason, no scientific reason, that we can't apply the principle of prevention to mental health conditions in the same way that we do other physiological conditions.
Absolutely. So let's dive in. What are some of those things that we can do preventatively? We've spoken about exercise. What are some of the other things that people at home can do to try and, you know, stave off these conditions?
Sure. So one of the big ones, and it can be a bit tricky because there are things that interfere with it that are outside of your control. But where it is in your control, we're absolutely wanting people to prioritize the quality of their sleep. And we've had a lot of discussions about sleep over the last few years with Matthew Walker's book, and that's been fantastic. And hopefully we've moved away from this idea that it's kind of, you know, macho and productive to limit your sleep in order to do more work. It's not big, it's not clever, you're hurting your brain, go to bed. So if possible, all of those helpful things, you know, not too much caffeine close to bedtime, not too much nicotine close to bedtime, because both of those things will stimulate and keep your brain alert when you don't want to be doing that. Making sure you're getting plenty of early morning light, because that's going to anchor your circadian rhythm and help your body to have a good healthy sleep-wake cycle. Making sure that you are, well, exercise as well helps to improve sleep quality. So all of these things kind of loop in and protect each other. And we think quite strongly that sleep conditions, sleep problems are related to increased risk of things like Alzheimer's disease, because during deep sleep, your brain essentially goes through a cleanse. And so if you're limiting your access, the amount of deep sleep that you're getting, you're limiting your brain's ability to refresh in that way. So sleep would be up there alongside exercise as something really important. And something that people are coming around to, thankfully, is the importance of nutrition in protecting your brain health. And I think the two big ones that I want people to really be thinking about are your B vitamins. So B12, B6, B9, because they are really crucial for just the structure and function of your brain. A meta-analysis was just released. So a meta-analysis is when they pull together all the good quality research and look for global trends. And when you do that, we can feel more confident of the quality of the conclusions. And a new meta-analysis was just released that said that B vitamins can help improve cognitive function in non-demented people. So people who don't have dementia, people who don't have mild cognitive impairment, if they take B vitamin supplements, do improve their cognitive function, their processing speed, their decision-making, those sorts of things. So B vitamins, crucially important, and omega-3 fatty acids, so, so important to the structure and function of the brain. And the worrying thing being that basically no one is getting enough, because no one's eating the recommended amount of oily fish in their diet. So those would be the two key ones, along with leafy green vegetables. And again, they're a really good source of a range of nutrients, but also particularly B vitamins as well.
Oh, amazing. I have so many questions. Okay. So firstly, B vitamins with, just very excited. B vitamins, is that supplement form or foods? So you said supplements are good. Is that in place of trying to get them in your food, or can we just not get enough through our food?
So I would always say food first where possible. And so things that are rich in B vitamins are, you know, again, leafy greens, things like Marmite, are a good source of B vitamins.
Oh my God, I eat so much Marmite.
Well, there was actually a really interesting study.
I have a whole Marmite drawer. I actually do. When I put this podcast out, I'm going to share the photo.
Marmite was associated with reduced incidence of anxiety, and they think it's because it has such a high level of B vitamins. Full disclosure, though, that I do take a supplement, and that's simply because I think this stuff is so important that I take it as an insurance policy. And with B vitamins, at least, because they're water soluble, if you take a, you know, if your body has too much of it, you'll just excrete it in your urine. So, you know, you can't take on too much. So food first where possible, but supplement probably as an insurance policy for some people.
What's the recommended amount of omega-3 fatty acids that you're meant to have every day?
So the recommended amount, I'm not sure if there is a proper daily amount. And certainly all the researchers that I've spoken to, because I'm doing a special podcast series on the impact of essentially omega-3 deficiencies on brain health, on things like in children, behavioral problems, ADHD, impulsivity, but also in violence and aggression in adults. And all of those researchers say around a gram a day is what's needed. So that would probably be coming in supplement form if you're not eating, you know, maybe two or three portions of oily fish a week. So again, I do top up with a supplement as well as eating a fair amount of fish.
Yeah, especially at the moment, you might not be able to get access to fish regularly, or it might be, you know, not a bad idea to take a supplement.
Mm.
And then on exercise, you said that exercise was great for brain health. Is there any specific exercise? Because I think this is something that I sometimes find quite confusing. Mm. As a journalist, I'm always sent different stories and stats about what kind of exercise we should be doing. You know, should it be HIIT? Should it be yoga? Should it be cardio? And I'd love to hear whether you think it actually makes a difference, basically, to our brain health, the kind of exercise, or is it just any exercise?
Well, it's actually that different types of exercise have different important functions for the brain. So aerobic exercise broadly. So when we're thinking about exercise and brain health, there are a few different features. One is turning on of a compound called BDNF, which is brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is essentially a growth factor. It helps the brain to build new brain cells and it helps the survival of the ones you already have. And exercise across the board helps turn this on. But different types of exercise do different things as well. So aerobic exercise, really in the same way that it protects your heart by helping to keep your blood vessels nice and flexible and helping to improve your blood pressure, because your brain has so many tiny blood vessels, it does the same thing for your brain. So it helps to keep those blood vessels in your brain, which are of course need to keep your brain nourished with oxygen and nutrients and energy, helps to keep them flexible. And we want that because when those brain cells are inflexible or when they become blocked, that's when we get things like strokes and vascular dementia, which is a dementia associated with unhealthy blood vessels in the brain. So aerobic exercise for kind of blood vessels, but your resistance or weight bearing exercise is really important. It really switches on that BDNF. So the same compounds that help you build muscles, BDNF and IGF-1, also do the same thing for your brain cells. So there's, you know, it's really about both. And we know with older women, trials showing resistance training show that they have older women who do weight bearing, you know, resistance training, lifting weights or body weight exercises have less essential damage in their brain than older women who don't. So that's really important. But also things like yoga are really good as well. And yoga, partly because it improves your strength and flexibility. And that's important as you get older. Having flexibility and good balance is important for avoiding things like fractures and falls. But also because of the breathing practices that are often associated with yoga, you get a reduction in stress as well. And we know that stress is really bad for the brain. So exercise across the board, and it's really about helping people to do a combination of exercise that they enjoy to get the full range of benefits.
Amazing.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
And what about hormone health? How much do our hormones affect our brain health, especially during lockdown? Anecdotally, I've had a lot of my friends saying that they've experienced kind of like longer symptoms of PMS, or they felt that their hormones were like out of whack and that was affecting how they felt mentally. Is that something that you've heard as well? And what can we do for the interaction between our hormones and our brains?
So I'm going to split this question into two. So in terms of hormones, I don't know a huge amount, so, you know, a full disclosure. But what we do know, for example, in particular for women, is that estrogen is neuroprotective. And so that's the reason that we think that women, because women have a twice-fold risk of Alzheimer's disease to men. So 2 out of every 3 Alzheimer's disease patients is a woman. And we think that risk comes because after the menopause, women lose that protective effect of estrogen on the brain, which also raises the question of risks of anything else that a woman does during her life that affects her estrogen. So that's where hormones might play quite an important role in brain protection, particularly for women. But this thing about periods, I think possibly isn't hormones. It's probably more about magnesium. Because what we know is that when you're stressed, and lockdown is quite stressful, coronavirus is very stressful and anxiety provoking. When you're stressed, you have a higher kind of use of and dumping of magnesium. And what's important about magnesium, so magnesium plays a role in lots of different enzyme reactions in the body, but it's also required for muscle relaxation, smooth muscle relaxation. So when your muscle tenses, in order to relax again, it needs magnesium. So if you've been particularly stressed and you've used up all of your magnesium, you've dumped all of your magnesium, and then you start your period, then when you get a cramp, you have less available magnesium to release that cramp. So you're likely to have more painful periods during periods of stress. So I would probably err on the side that it's more likely to be magnesium, and people might want to try during periods of stress, you know, and speaking to your GP or your health professional, but maybe trying a magnesium supplement to see if that helps.
Yeah, fantastic. I think magnesium is great across the board. I always just take it. I feel like it can't hurt. And it's good. It's good for muscles. And what about serotonin? Is there anything we can do to increase the amount of serotonin in our brains?
Well, I'm not sure we'd want to increase the amount of serotonin in our brains. Too much serotonin is actually neurotoxic. So we probably wouldn't want to do that.
Good to know.
I've just done a series of posts on my Instagram about this because I had a few people ask questions because I will be doing a nutrition for the brain Q&A. So people were sending in their questions and I got a lot of questions about how can I boost serotonin in my brain. So I've actually done 3 videos about, actually, it's not about serotonin and it's probably not about tryptophan, which is the precursor to serotonin, which you can get more of by, you know, eating certain foods. But it's really about what the body does with tryptophan under certain physiological conditions. And so it's probably more about how you manage your stress in terms of making sure that you have sufficient tryptophan in order to make serotonin than it is about making sure that you're eating enough tryptophan containing foods to make additional serotonin. Does that make sense? Possibly not. Go watch the videos.
Okay. Good. I'll leave them in the box ID so people can find it. So I've now got a couple of questions from Twitter. Thank you so much. That was so useful. I've got some questions from Twitter. I was inundated, so I've left some extra time to answer some of these questions. So first off was from Sophie Eliza Price, who asks, do you have any recommendations for specific foods for productivity and or positivity in the context of COVID-19? So we've already talked about oily fish and leafy greens. Anything else?
Not really. You know, I think we need to be quite careful about saying, you know, certain foods will make you more productive. And I guess as a psychologist, I'd be thinking, why do you want to be more productive? What's getting in the way of your productivity? And probably what's getting in the way of your productivity is perhaps poor sleep if you're stressed and you're not sleeping very well, in which case, please focus on your sleep. Or, you know, anxiety, because sometimes anxiety can take your attention away and maybe you're focusing on the news and news updates and things like that. So I first question about what's taking away your productivity and can you focus your attention on fixing those things first? And then also, you know, just, I mean, there are some trials that show, for example, that certain doses of high polyphenol dark chocolate or 200 grams of blueberries can improve your processing speeds. But again, it's about how sustainable that is. You know, are you going to be chugging, you know, blueberries, kilos of them a day in order to be productive? So I think if you're just focusing on getting a nutrient dense intake of food alongside foods, of course, that you enjoy, you know, it's not about being ascetic about it, like enjoy your foods, but make sure you are also eating those nutrient dense foods in enjoyable ways as well. Taking care of your sleep, taking care of your exercise, that's going to be the kind of all round way of making sure that your brain is in the best condition for you to get the best out of it.
So the next question is from Carol, who asks, what's your view on the helpfulness of supplements for ADHD? Placebo, helpful, neutral, or detrimental? A lot of adjectives there.
Yes. Well, the evidence would suggest that high-ish doses of omega-3 fatty acids, somewhere around 1 to 3 grams per day, is associated with reduction in severity of symptoms of ADHD. Can I suggest that? I'm doing literally a special podcast series on that. So if you listen to my series, Crime and Nourishment, I speak to those researchers so you can hear it straight from the horse's mouth and kind of make up your own decision. I'll also be linking to the evidence so you can read the papers yourself. So that's what the evidence says to the best of my knowledge at the moment.
Perfect. There you go, Carol. Fab. Question from Camilla, who asks, how does an overloaded brain with homeschooling, work and life physically cope during this time?
So so similar to the magnesium situation, that when you're under a lot of stress, you have increased utilization of certain micronutrients, the B vitamins, magnesium and zinc. And interestingly, there's a researcher out in New Zealand called Julia Rutledge, and she found that following natural disasters, so following an earthquake and then also following the mosque shootings out in New Zealand, people who took a broad spectrum micronutrient supplement, so vitamins and minerals, actually had reduced risk of PTSD. So that kind of tells us that there is this greater utilization of these micronutrients and why it's important to be ensuring that you're eating a nutrient dense diet, you know, looking after your diet during periods of stress, not letting it go to the wayside if you can. And perhaps if you are struggling to eat well for whatever reason, perhaps thinking about, a broad spectrum vitamin mineral supplement. And of course, alongside those omega-3s.
I don't know if you're allowed to answer this, but are there any particular brands of these supplements that you really like?
I always just kind of say the best one that people can afford, because I know that budgets vary. With magnesium, you just need to be careful not to use magnesium oxide just because it's not very bioavailable. So magnesium comes in lots of different forms, magnesium citrate and fumarate and I think glutarate as well. So not oxide. And again, with vitamin D, not vitamin D2. I think basically all the supplement companies have switched to make sure it's all D3 now, and it should be D3. If you're taking a fish oil supplement, you'll want to make sure that it's high in EPA and DHA. One that just says we've got lots of ALA isn't really in the form that your brain needs. So it's more about looking at the formulations and, of course, asking in the health food store, particularly the independent health food stores tend to be quite well trained in knowing what the best quality vitamin supplements in your price range will be.
The next question is from Laura, who asks, is it important for people to psychologically step away from their workspace at the end of the day in the absence of a commute, especially for those in small flats where the workspace and relaxation space are the same? How can they do this? So slightly different, but I think that it is important because I think our stress is also quite linked to our physical space and how we try and relax in it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I suggest finding a ritual to do, because essentially almost your commute becomes a ritual. You know, you pack up your desk, whatever, and you get on the train, and it's somewhere in between that process of sitting down and opening the paper or opening a book or turning on a podcast. You're giving your mind the cue that the workday is over and the relaxation time has started. So you need to find a ritual that you can do at home that does that. So it might be, changing out of your work clothes and into your pajamas, or, out of your day pajamas and into your night pajamas. Or it might be, making, if you've been drinking coffee in the morning, then you switch to tea in the afternoon, and that's at the end of the workday or whatever. And that's your sign that you're not working anymore. So find a ritual, a small thing that you can do that just takes a couple of minutes, that is a trigger to tell your brain work day is over now, and now it's time to relax.
I find for me it's quite helpful to take my fresh air of the day at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just to take a walk at that point. And then I feel like when I come back in, I'm trying to be in a different state of mind, I suppose.
Yeah, that change of scene is also a change of mental state. No, absolutely.
And then the final question was from Felicity. We've kind of touched on it, but she asked, can preventative measures or actions help people who have dementia, Alzheimer's in the family, or is the future written in genetics?
It absolutely, when it comes to Alzheimer's disease, it absolutely is not written in genetics. We do know that there are genetic risk factors, particularly an allele called APOE3, and that increases your risk if you are a carrier. But we think that that genetic risk factor only accounts for less than 5% of all cases of Alzheimer's disease around the world, which means that the rest of the cases are what's called sporadic and associated with, you know, general bad luck and or lifestyle factors. But a global Lancet review a couple of years ago, 2017, said that if people took on the best lifestyle risk factors, you know, preventative measures, we could reduce global incidence of Alzheimer's disease by 30%. So that's one in three cases of Alzheimer's disease could be prevented through changes in our lifestyles. So I think that's really important for people to know. The earlier you start those lifestyle factors, the better, because changes in the brain that lead to Alzheimer's start 2 to 3 decades before you start seeing symptoms. So they start in your 20s and 30s before you start seeing your symptoms in your, you know, late 50s and 60s. And that's essentially what I've written my entire book about, which is about what these factors are and how you can introduce them into your life in very easy 3-minute doses per day to help build a healthy brain lifestyle, to give you the best chance of holding onto your brain health for the long term.
Fantastic. Well, I think it's a really positive message, and it's great to know that we're in control of these things, I suppose.
You've got a little bit of influence, and it's really important for people to know that. Yeah.
Amazing. The final thing I wanted to ask, which isn't, it's not on my notes and it's not a question from Twitter, but I wanted to ask about loneliness, because I think that seems to be, for me, the thing that I think people are finding the most challenging during this lockdown period is feeling isolated, feeling like they're sitting with their anxious thoughts and perhaps don't have support or community around us. It's not really a question on brain health. It's just, what do you think we can do about feeling lonely, and how important is it to feel connected?
It's so important to feel connected. Loneliness is actually a risk factor for dementia because it's stressful. So the stress of being separated creates risk factors for the brain. And so we should be. And one of the things I think about lockdown is that it's made people realize how much they rely on almost those little incidental moments of contact. You know, the person at the coffee shop who knows your order, the person that you see on your commute that who perhaps you don't even talk to, but you recognize and you see them. And it's like someone else in the world who knows I exist and that I'm here, and it's a marker of normality. And so what we should be doing now, and hopefully that will take forward with us outside of lockdown, is really investing in our relationships. So, you know, making more of an effort perhaps to turn those work friendships into outside of work friendships, making regular time to FaceTime your parents or your friends in Australia, you know, making sure that, you know, we're not just hustling, we're not just trying to be productive, that we're not just trying to accumulate all those outside signals of success, but we're really investing in our relationships, because those are the things that give life meaning and purpose.
Absolutely. And I think those little incidental moments of connection are now, you realize how important they are. And you know, the most exciting part of my day is either when my postman comes or when I go to my local newsagent. And that is like, you know, I try and have a proper chat with him, because I mean, I live alone. It's my source of, communication for the day. And I think it's so important.
Absolutely.
Quite embarrassed by how many times I've gone to get multi-bar buttons, but
maybe we'll keep some behind the counter for you now.
The shame. Maybe. Amazing. Kimberly, thank you so much for your time. If people would like to find out more about you and follow you online, where should they go?
So they can go to my website, which is kimberlywilson.co, or I spent probably far too much time on Instagram, where I am at food and psych. So find me there.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate and review the podcast so more people can find it. You can also follow me on social media at Jelly Malin on all platforms. There's two new episodes out every week, so subscribe now so you don't miss any of the upcoming episodes.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.